Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
From Vice News, headline, cryptocurrency investors try to turn private islands into blockchain utopias, which made me think of our co-host Mark Edge, as he's been flying here and hither and thither around the world trying to find some perfect place, usually looking at islands to build some sort of Kingdom of Mark or whatever. I don't know if he's going to be advertising it as a blockchain utopia, but I remember it was early 2021 he had flown down to it was 2020. It was right before COVID he had flown down to Saipan to join the crypto frontier. And that was a project to attract crypto people to the islands of Saipan, which is part of the United States, down in the Asian Pacific.
Is that the same as Mariana Islands?
Yes. Yeah, okay. That's correct. Saipan is the capital. I guess I should have been clear. Northern Mariana Islands, to be specific.
Sorry. Yeah, that's correct. It's the northern, not...
Guam is the southern one, or maybe it's the most...
It's nearby. I don't know
Guam's
if it's...
in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's that area of the world, and Mark had gone down there to be a part of that. And what I've heard through the rumor mill now is that the founder of the crypto frontier has called it quits. We've heard about El Salvador, which is, of course, the first state on the planet to start accepting Bitcoin as legal tender. And that happened back in September of 2021. And they've since been talking about offering up a bond that people could purchase with cryptocurrency or with cash that would then be used to fund what's called the Bitcoin City. Now, it's not going to be an island per se, but it is indeed something that's going to be targeted at Bitcoin people with the idea of, hey, come here, we're going to abolish most taxes, although I believe they're still going to have a value, so-called value-added tax, but they're, you know, capital gains, that won't be present, they say. Income tax won't be present, they claim. You know, again, you can't trust governments as far as you can throw them. But nonetheless, it's an interesting proposal. But according to Vice magazine, as long as cryptocurrencies have existed, libertarians have dreamed of using them to create communities, seasteads, and cities free from the prying eyes of the state and its tax collectors. We've seen crypto-inspired attempts to claim disputed lands as tax havens, use UFOs and fireworks to christen a new tax-free Bitcoin town, build cities with decentralized autonomous organizations, and establish communities inside of U.S. colonies to avoid taxes. But now there's a wave of attempts to buy entire islands and build the next crypto paradise. The first one to look at is Cryptoland, founded by Max Oliver and Helena Lopez, who reportedly have a checkered history.
I'm calling. I just had a question about Bitcoin. I was wondering, what's your opinion on the best way to buy Bitcoin right now? I've been looking at like a few different ways. It seems like a lot of them you have to use an ID. But I know like with ones like Monero, you don't need that.
I can probably answer this one. The best way to buy crypto is in person, if you can. Sometimes you can do that at things like crypto meetups, depending on where you are. I know in Keene, New Hampshire, you know, people are frequently coming out to crypto meetups to buy and sell cryptocurrency if you in person.
I believe there's the Manchester is going to have their 500th crypto meetup. Like, they're celebrating 10 years of weekly crypto meetups. They claim it's the most... I guess the longest running regular crypto meetup on the planet. It's a pretty big claim, but they're celebrating that. I think it's like an invitation, or not invitation, but it's a ticketed event. Normally they're not ticketed. Normally you just show up and, you know, hang out with people. But I expect there's going to be a lot of people at that particular event. So if you're looking to make a crypto purchase in real life, that might be a good place to go do it.
Yeah, I mean, basically find out where the crypto people are, because it's not hard. It's you know, it's like making change for most crypto people. So
unless, of course, you're looking to buy a large amount of cryptocurrency. I mean, the larger the amount, the more difficult
it could be. More difficult,
it gets to be. I don't know how many of the crypto vending machines out there have a super low tier where you don't have to show ID. I think a lot of them still require a phone number, but I think it's like after a certain amount, they want you to show ID. So if you go to coinatmradar.com, that'll show you crypto vending machines that are nearby to your location. There actually like are thousands of these in the United States, so there's quite a bit. Look at more than one of them, because they all have different rules. Some of them might require ID at $1,000. Others might require ID at $1,500. Others might require it the whole time. Some of them might charge you 20%. Others might
charge
10%.
Yeah, some of the fees could be high.
So you're going to pay a lot through that means. And then, of course, there is localbitcoins.com, which is full of scam artists, so you do have to be careful. But generally, if you buy from a reliable seller there, like somebody who's got a rating, then you're not going to be buying from a scam artist. So I think your risk is fairly low in that particular way.
You know what I recommend people do usually is just buy a little bit of crypto at first, mm-hmm. and then increase that over time.
Right.
And then just keep using the same person if they're actually doing what they say.
And local Bitcoins, some of them may actually ask you for ID because a lot of them, are still being compliant with government regulations or whatever. But in that case, it's only that person. So we're sharing a Vice story here about these cryptocurrency islands. One of them is Cryptoland. We've been...
Where is it again?
Actually, I don't know. Do you know, Chris? Did you ever find out?
I don't think you mentioned
it,
did you?
Oh, I did.
They don't say it here.
Is it Indonesia? I think it might be Indonesia.
Oh, wow.
Well, they have Komodo dragons, so count me out. Or Komodo dragons.
Oh, lizards, you mean? Like big lizards?
Yeah, those huge lizards.
They eat
dogs and babies.
So the video is 10 minutes long, and it's all animated. They don't have any actual photographs or any buildings, or there's nothing, right? It's just a sales pitch, and it's as they describe it here, it's best described as an unhinged fever dream driven by a talking Bitcoin tour guide, a miserable amount of crypto jokes every step of the way, a strange dance number, and more. It's a full-on suffocation by blockchain meme. The toilets on the island are called S-Coin, and the toilet paper is made of dollar bills and labeled wipe paper with three R's, which for the blissfully uninitiated is a tortured play on the term white paper. And the stimulus meme, money printer go burr. So they're just literally combining memes together for jokes here. It's hard to also overstate how important the creators of Cryptoland see this widely mocked video as being to their mission. One of them says in the video, quote, "We quickly realized it was practically impossible to convey this all with a PDF or something because it's so abstract." When one Twitter user asked Cryptoland what the age of consent would be, Cryptoland's Twitter account replied, "Mental maturity should be more than enough." One thing that's for certain, though, is that Cryptoland is selling NFTs. They feature the video's talking Bitcoin mascot and fall into two types of NFTs. King Cryptolander NFTs that cost 319 Ethereum, which at the time of this writing was just over $1 million worth of Ethereum.
So what's up with people selling NFTs and just setting a price? That's so weird to me. Just auction them like Melania, she was like, "I'm selling 300 pictures of my eyes for $100 each."
Well, Melania is now doing an auction. So she was setting the price. Now she's doing it differently. But you can do your NFT however you want.
I know, but it's just like, who's going to want to just buy that for $3 million or whatever you said?
One of the things I'm still not understanding is they're kind of implying that it's going to be a country, but at the same time, there's no basis for that. They don't own the land. They don't have control over the land.
There's going to be some government gang that's going to claim.
Right. And that dominion. Land, as I understand it, is protected land. So it's...
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they can't even build on it, even if they did buy it.
In fact, interestingly, one of the details I didn't mention yet about this is that apparently Cryptoland, if you try to buy one of their NFTs, you have to certify you're not a U.S. citizen in order to do that, which is interesting.
Which is funny because I think they're the people that are selling it. I forget how they're doing it exactly, but they're people who I guess work for them sort of.
Mm-hmm.
They're U.S. citizens and they're not allowed to actually partake, but they've all signed this agreement or something to that effect.
Weird. Chris knows a lot more about this story than he let on.
You've looked into this deeply.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Did you look into their competitor, Satoshi Island?
I don't know. I don't think I know anything about that.
Sounds like Yoshi Island.
Might be probably not as fun, but who knows? It's another crypto utopia, according to Vice, supposedly in the works, featuring a 32 million square foot island, which sounds large, but it's really only 1.1 square miles. So about the same size.
Wait,
as
how
Cryptoland.
Is that the same size as 600 square?
It was 600 acres, and this is 32 million square feet. So I guess that's a similar amount.
I thought you had said 32 million acres.
Yeah, I don't know how many foot there are in an acre off the top of my head. But anyway, 1.1 square miles in Vanuatu an archipelago of islands between Australia and Fiji, so in the same region of the world. It's slightly larger than Cryptoland, but has substantially less information available about it.
I wanted to talk about the Pledge of Allegiance in schools.
Hmm. Okay.
So, well, the Pledge of Allegiance, I guess, at all. So I was recently with my two girls, ages 6 and 14, at a 4-H meeting, of all places, and they said the Pledge of Allegiance, which I haven't personally heard in since I was a child.
Wow.
And then I got to asking, you know, my kids, my little one's in a private school, so they don't do it there, but my older one is in a public school, and apparently they do it on Mondays.
Oh, interesting. When I was in school, they did it every single day.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
Yeah, that's what I remember, every single day.
It's just bizarre that we're still doing this.
Well, I mean...
I mean, why does it surprise you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we still live in a highly nationalistic land, so this thing, it's constantly being done at government meetings, and if it's a government school, you better believe it's being done there. I mean, it's an indoctrination pledge, so the state absolutely wants to continue it.
Doesn't make it still bizarre. Or not bizarre. It is
well,
bizarre.
No, it is. I don't think anybody's doubting it's bizarre. It's very bizarre.
Oh,
I'm
fully against the thing, but yeah. I'm just not surprised that it's continuing. You need to know this, and I don't think a lot of the people who just routinely say the pledge know this. It was written by a Christian socialist in the late 1800s. He was a flag salesman who wanted to inculcate the people of America with more patriotism or nationalism.
To sell his flags.
He would be able to sell more flags. And then ultimately, somehow, it got, I don't know what the process was from going from him to becoming this national phenomenon, now, but somebody implemented it at a national level.
Was this the Pledge of Allegiance or was this the Nazi
Pledge? Of Allegiance.
Because there was that Nazi pledge.
No, it
wasn't
that it was a Nazi pledge. It was that instead of putting your hand on your heart while saying the pledge originally, they were doing a salute. I'm not going to do it and somebody screenshots me.
Yeah, it's called the fascist salute. And you've seen the Nazis do that salute.
Yeah.
And you can actually look, if you just search online for Pledge of Allegiance, Nazi salute, or fascist salute.
You can find little school children doing it to the American flag.
Yes, there's no shortage of these old black and white photos of kids doing the Nazi salute to the American flag. And then after the Nazis adopted it, then the United States government said, oh, no, let's change it. We'll make it the hand
over
the
heart. Yeah, it's just a nice, sweet gesture.
But that doesn't take away the fact that it is absolutely socialist, pro-government indoctrination. What is the difference between a socialist and a communist?
Well, to me, there is no difference. To me,
honest. She's honest.
Wow, that's the first honest socialist I've ever heard.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Sarah. Yeah. What were you saying? So there's no difference in what?
To me, there is no this difference between socialism and communism.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think there is any kind of difference? And the reason I called in about is that, you know, Darren Queen, as a pharmaceutical, they got sued and they have to pay out $90 million worth in penalty. It just was announced. A New York judge announced that.
What is this company? A pharmaceutical company? I've never heard of them. Darren?
Yeah, it's called Darren Queen. I just only heard it one time on the news tonight.
Hmm.
So what it is they hoarded the market. And then they excluded all the generic brands from copying their ingredients. But, you know, as a socialist communist, our medication would be completely free in a communist society. There you go.
Why would anyone be motivated to make new medicines if they weren't able to be compensated for their efforts? Here's the thing, Sarah. What you're talking about with sharing, there's nothing wrong with sharing. It's a nice thing to, you know, be willing to give to another person. I don't think those things should be taken out of society or anything like that. But the difference is between communism and real sharing is with real sharing, you share because you want to. You share because it feels good. You share because it's helping someone. Whatever the different reasons are. Hold on, Sarah. I'm not done. Whatever the different reasons are for the individual, they're choosing to share. Whereas under communism, they're told, you will give to others or you will be shot. And that's the difference. Under communism, sharing is mandatory. It is forced by the threat of violence and actual violence. And that leads people to not want to be so generous. And it leads people to hide their wealth. It leads people to feel, you know, upset at the idea of having to give people the things that they've earned, especially when other people aren't actually pulling their own weight, when they're actually acting as though they're hurt, even though they could work in the fields or whatever, and then they're just taking instead of giving. And it gets really ugly because what you're talking about is going against human nature, and you're going to try to use violence to force people to share, and it never works.
And as a kid, a lot of people are taught that things are black and white, and they are taught that a lot of things are virtues that aren't necessarily always virtues, and sharing is one of those things.
In a free market, which we don't have, you have open competition where anyone who wants to can create something and offer it for sale, and that scares people. They feel like, oh my God, we have to have the government to approve medications. Well, even with the government approving medications, you still end up having terrifying side effects of things. Look at what's happening with the vaccines, for instance, for COVID, as just one recent example. But there's been other ones where the federal government has come back and said, oh, yeah, that medicine that we approved 10 years ago, turns out it causes, you know, fill in the blank, malady, and all these people died from it, and we're going to recall that medicine now. So, like, the process is political. The process costs billions of dollars for these corporations to get medicines through. And why is the cost of medication so high? Because of the hoops that they have to jump through to not just develop the medications, but to get it through the bureaucratic process. And so that's the reason why things are so expensive in the medical field. And then, of course, there's all the liability that goes on. So really, it's all created by the state. And giving the state total control over medicine isn't going to make that better. It's going to make it worse. And as we were saying, you're working against human nature when it comes to communism. But I'm sure Sarah will call in again soon enough about that topic. So let's get into the Germany stories. You guys had a couple stories about Germany tonight. Bonnie, yours was regarding the German newspaper, one of the largest, if not the largest German newspaper, coming forward with an apology.
This story says it is the largest. This is from techstartups.com. Germany's largest newspaper, Bild, B-I-L-D, apologizes for harming society over its coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic during the past 18 months. Back in April 2020, we wrote about Germany's largest newspaper, Bild, after it condemned China for endangering the world and also for being the world's, quote, greatest export of the coronavirus. With a circulation of currently about 1.37 million copies daily, the Bild newspaper is published by the Axel Springer Publishing Company.
That is a large newspaper. I think that even dwarfs the New York Times.
This sounds like they're under pressure from China.
China,
China will do that sort of thing to people and companies and entities in order to get them to, like, apologize for saying mean things about China.
It would make sense if that's what they ended up saying, but when I get to the apology, I don't think it's related to China. I want to express here that neither our government nor our chancellor dares to tell you. We ask you to forgive us. Forgive us for this policy, which for a year and a half has made you victims of violence, neglect, isolation, and loneliness. Sorry for this policy and media coverage, which, like poison, made you feel like you were a mortal danger to society. You are not a danger to society. Don't believe this lie. It's up to us to protect you. What happened to our children, many people, and Bild denounce it. Merkel, did she organize a summit for children? This was originally in German, so it's kind of a weird translation. Did Merkel organize a summit for children? No. Instead, we persuaded our children that they were going to murder their grandma if they dared to be what they are, children, or if they met their friends. None of this has been scientifically proven. It was easy to force that on the kids. They can't defend themselves and they don't vote. When a state steals the rights of a child, it must prove that by doing so, it protects him against concrete and imminent danger. This proof has never been provided. It has been replaced by propaganda.
We're going to share with you a quote from our friend Nobody. Bonnie's been doing some research. She's been digging through old Nobody interviews because our friend Nobody has been prohibited by court bail conditions in the Crypto 6 case. You can learn more about that over at thecrypto6.com. He's been prohibited from speaking publicly about him or him, you know, his opinions or anything. And so we dug up some old opinions of Nobody, and you did the digging, Bonnie. We're doing the reading. Here is one of them that you found. He said this, quote, "The first fact of life in living under a government is you live under constant threat of extortion. They are literally saying that you need to pay us for a contract that you never willingly entered into." Unquote.
Yep.
And of course, the contract he's talking about there is the so-called social contract.
Sounds socialist.
Which definitely sounds socialist. It certainly doesn't actually exist. Because if you ever ask somebody who's an advocate of the social contract to show it to you, well, they can't.
It's just an idea.
Yeah, the idea of the social contract is you do what we say, we being the government gang, and they say whatever they want to say.
You can't call anything a contract if it hasn't been agreed to by both sides and signed.
Correct, correct. Yeah, the contracts have very specific aspects to them. There are certain elements that make up a contract. You have to be presented with the contract, meaning you have to, like you said, you have to have the opportunity to review it.
Have you heard of Pocket?
No.
Pocket will store, I don't know exactly what it stores, but at least it stores links, I believe.
Okay.
So it'll like save your browsing history and things of that nature.
Right. So should Pocket be prohibited, or any web browser be prohibited from allowing you to bookmark an evil website?
Right. If you can use a browser like Firefox and use Pocket to save your hate links, then maybe it should be shut down. Mm. I mean, I think it's just an absolute.
That's about the same level of
crazy argument.
I mean, I know that Germans love WhatsApp. Why can't you send a death threat or a hate message over WhatsApp?
You can.
Oh, you can.
I mean, this is the point. It's crazy. It's like, it's a general tool. We're going to shut it down because a certain group uses it or some percentage of it, or a certain group uses it, even though there's other people on the opposing side that also use it.
It's obvious to me that they want to take it down because it's hard for them to patrol.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some truth to that, but Italy has been successful at censoring Telegram. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. And
how?
I don't, they had a court order and Telegram censored the room. I think it had to do with piracy websites, but nonetheless, the point is that it can definitely be censored.
Bonnie makes a great point here. How in the world does the German government expect that they're going to, even if they choose to try, to ban Telegram, one of the world's most popular messaging apps?
I don't think that they actually have any idea at this point
what they're talking about.
Yeah. And part of it is because it's politicians talking, right?
Sure. And so, they're actually promoting Telegram every moment that they do this, right? Like, for all the people that hadn't heard of Telegram, now you've heard of it.
So there is Germany probably, I don't know with certainty, but a lot of countries in Europe have censorship already built in. So the ISPs are mandated. It was
they have a list, like a blacklist.
It started off as, you know, the excuse was, well, we have to protect people from child pornography, right, or something of that nature. And so they have these lists, but it doesn't mean that they can block Telegram, because Telegram does have some, I don't necessarily know if I want to say decentralization to it, but it does have some mechanisms to kind of hinder this sort of these sorts of technologies, right? They're not hard to get around. You change your DNS. They're basically using something called DNS. If the most hated people on the planet, right, can get around these sorts of tools and censorship and all that stuff,
right,
you really think the right wingers are not going to be able to get around it?
Yeah. I mean, look at 4chan hasn't been shut down,
right?
Like, there's so many different places where really
and that's on the
speech.
Public internet. It's not on the dark web, you know? Talks about possible measures against Telegram are ongoing, an Interior Ministry spokesman said on Wednesday, adding that it wasn't clear what legal and technical procedures would be necessary to switch off Telegram. Yeah, it probably isn't Because again, you're going to probably have to do some sort of deep packet inspection, and I don't know that I don't know that there is any. Again, I don't know Germany enough well enough to know, but I don't think Germany's got that level of sophistication as far as their censorship.
If those packets are encrypted? What if Telegram is
And that's the other problem, yeah. Right? I mean, if you've got encrypted packets and they're going to Google servers, I mean, how do you distinguish legitimate? I'll put legitimate in quotes, legitimate Google traffic from non-legitimate, Telegram traffic.
I think the best they could do would be to go to Google and Apple and say, block this in any in our jurisdiction.
So it's actually interesting you should say this, because there's actually Google actually did do something the last time this happened. So
was that Italy?
I think this was Russia.
So let me give you some quotes from Pavel Durov, and then you can make up your mind as to what you might believe about him. He says, obviously, I do have political views. I'm a believer in the free market economy. I also believe that without competition and respect for human rights, there will be no progress because nobody will feel safe and free. That's one quote. He says, in my past, it looked like I could get into trouble in Russia, but I was not afraid then, and I'm not afraid now. Fear paralyzes you and doesn't let you go forward. He says, to be truly free, you should be ready to risk everything for freedom. He says, I'm a peaceful creature. I'm vegetarian. I don't like wars. Pavel Durov says, the probability that we will get into a car accident is a million times higher than the probability we will suffer as a result of a terrorist act. He says, further, the best legislative initiative is the absence of one. That's a pretty anarchist statement right there. He says, me, myself, I'm not a big fan of the idea of countries.
Nice.
And he says, a lot of people in the Western world don't realize how much taxes limit their options. You can end up paying almost half your income in taxes.
More.
Which basically means you're working for the government for 180 days a year.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more. All for free at freetalklive.com.